Is this recording? It's saying recording.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's recording, but hopefully it will just cut all of this out.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Somewhere in Between, the podcast made by AITs for AITs, brought to you by the Royal College of GPs. My name's Anthony. I'm an ST3 in Northwest London, and I'm chair of the college's AIT committee. And I'm also joined today by two amazing co-hosts, who I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Meera Kumar. I'm an RCGP rep for South London faculty. I'm on the AIT committee, and I'm a GP ST1 working in South London based at King's.
Hi, I'm Hatim. I'm an AIT rep in Northwest London on the RCGP Northwest London faculty, and I'm a GP trainee in Hillingdon.
So when we started recording this podcast, we actually recorded a previous episode, which was meant to be the first edition of the Somewhere in Between podcast. But over the last few weeks, things have changed quite dramatically. And it felt that we all felt that that edition of the podcast might not necessarily capture the current mood and the current experience for GP trainees working around the country. COVID-19 has already had a massive impact on all GP trainees and on the whole of society. And we've seen trainees being redeployed across different clinical areas, having to manage rapidly shifting working patterns. We've seen cancellation of exams, cancellation of annual and some study leave. We've seen the cancellation of lots of different events. And over the coming months, I guess lots of trainees are going to have to be dealing with all of these pressures and more as the situation continues to develop. We're going to be dealing with some really intense emotions. There might be times where we feel afraid of being sick ourselves, of potentially spreading the infection to loved ones. And with that can come guilt as well. And we're going to be managing all of this alongside everything that we already do as trainees, which could be include caring for our young families, dealing with our own health issues, and many other responsibilities that all of us carry throughout our daily working lives.
Yeah, and I think we all think that this podcast might be a helpful resource or tool, or just even just to get a conversation started between AITs. There's lots of different topics that Anthony's obviously already mentioned that we want to talk about in this emerging health crisis, and questions no doubt everyone will have about the future shape of training, or indeed how we're managing just with our current patient load and work that we're expected to do at the moment. So I think our aim for this podcast would just to be getting views of people around the country, finding out what's going on, but also having a voice together so that we all feel that we're not alone in this.
We should probably also just quickly touch on something that we tried to sort of cover previously, is what is an AIT? So what's an associate in training?
Oh yeah, good point.
Because many people still don't really know.
Yeah, I'm still trying to work it out myself. But an associate in training basically is the name that the RCGP gives to anyone who's at some stage during their GP training journey, so anywhere from the ST1 to ST4 and everything in between. If we're taking time out for starting a family, if we're taking time out for pursuing some research or other interests, everyone who is part of the GP trainee family is an associate in training. Is how I like to look at it anyway.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summation there.
So, yeah, as Meera said, I think the aim of this podcast, even before the COVID-19 situation began, was to help start a conversation for AITs to discuss training, to discuss issues that were affecting us in our professional and personal lives as well, and to really help to disseminate information a bit more and to hear from you guys about important topics that you wanted to cover. Over the coming months, coronavirus is obviously going to be one of the most important things that you want to talk about, but equally we're here to have a conversation around any topics, whether that's a professional or personal thing, and we can feed those into future episodes of this podcast as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess if you want to get in touch with us, we are all on Twitter. That's a recent joining from me. So I guess we have a Somewhere in Between email address, don't we, Ant?
Yeah, any kind of, if you have any topics or anything you'd like to cover, you can always contact us on the AIT email address, which is AIT chair@rcgp.org.uk. And then, like Mira says, we're also all on Twitter. So my Twitter is at Dr. Anthony James.
I'm at Dr. Mira Kumar.
And I'm at Dr_Hats.
And I'll do my best to try and figure out Twitter in, you know, the next couple of weeks.
So I guess when it comes to coronavirus, stuff is changing so rapidly that, you know, things are changing from one day to the next. But already we've seen this have a big impact on trainees. And trainees, when I've been speaking to them, have had a huge number of questions, some of which hopefully we can start to answer in this podcast. But I guess it would be good to hear from you guys. So I'm an ST3. I'm working in general practice at the minute. And I can talk a bit about my experiences and how things might have changed so far. But both Mira and Hatim are working in the hospital setting at the minute. So it'd be great to hear from you guys about how coronavirus has impacted your working lives so far.
Yeah, I guess from my perspective, so as I said, I'm an ST1. I did 6 months in GP and then I moved to King's, the Denmark Hill site, and doing a geriatrics job. I was actually initially clinic-based, so seeing lots of outpatients and that kind of clinic setting, which is more similar to GP. But since the, I guess, COVID-19 outbreak, it's been slightly redeployed and the meaning of my job is, role has changed, which I'm sure has happened similarly to lots of trainees across the country, depending on what jobs they were in. So I am now more of a filling in the rota gaps where there's, you know, staff needed on the wards, but also doing the general medical on call. So seeing lots of suspected and confirmed COVID-19 cases, which is, there are definite challenges associated with it, which I'm sure a lot of people are also feeling that sort of strain and worry as well. How about you, Hatim?
So I'm an ST2 in currently an accident and emergency, so I'm in an emergency department in Hindon. That's in northwest London, just south of Harrow, which is where a lot of the major outbreak seems to be at the moment, at Norfolk Park Hospital. But we've had a bit of a carryover from that. It's been a really interesting time to work in A&E, of course, because things are changing day to day. Everyone's really worried. There's lots of anxiety about PPE, so personal protective equipment. I'm sure everyone's got a PhD in masks by now, because literally I've seen a million posts and studies about different masks and what kind of protection they offer over the past couple of weeks. I think the important thing is that we need to stay protected. We need to stay safe. And that, most importantly, if we're going to go see patients, if we're comfortable and we feel safe, then that's only going to benefit the patients as a whole.
Definitely. And I think one of the things you said there, Hatton, which is just so true, I'm sure to all our colleagues working in hospital, but probably GP as well, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is it's trying to keep up to date with what the latest guidance is. So from being now on the wards just shy of 3 weeks, I think the guidance has changed daily, if not more than sort of twice a day. And I guess if you're having updates at your hospital, if there are updates either for general staff meetings or for the junior doctors, try your best to attend them or getting the information as quickly as possible. Lots of us have different shift patterns, so it may be that you're not in on a day where there has been a new piece of information from the chief executive. So check your emails. I think it's information is sort of power, especially in this situation. We just need to be armed with as much knowledge as we can when we're going on the wards dealing with these patients to make sure for their safety, but for our own as well.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think we've obviously got an opportunity here to talk about different experiences in different settings. So I can talk about how things have been in accident and emergency and what's that meant for sort of the system as a whole. Anthony, you can talk about how things are in primary care at the moment. And Mira, you can share how things are from a medicine point of view. And of course, that's the unique thing about being a GP trainee, is throughout your training, you get experiences in all sorts of areas. And none of us saw this coming. I don't know, Anthony, you might have had some foresight in calling this somewhere in between, because we really are truly somewhere in between at the moment.
I think the name somewhere in between was meant to recognize a journey that all of us are on, somewhere in between being a trainee and being a GP, but definitely now it's taken on a whole new meaning with everything that's happening.
And that's obviously a difficult time for all of us, because some people are worried of whether what's this going to mean for their CCTs. People are going to worry about what it's going to mean for their progression. And I think these are all things that we can at least talk about and share with you guys from what we know, but also what we're all concerned about through this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just to put a disclaimer in there as well, we are all strictly sort of following the social distancing rules and filming this via our new online platform of Zoom as well. So we had a really nice opportunity to get together 3 weeks ago. And I think probably all took it for granted that that might be the last time the three of us all sit in a room and and record something together. So everyone has a voice in this sort of issue and topic. So if you want to join in, please do. We're not all sat together trying to discuss things, but we can definitely do so from afar and from our sofas, I think.
Yeah. And I think a lot of my hopes for what this podcast is all about kind of sharing stories. And so if people do want to share their story about how COVID-19 is impacting you on the ground, then please do get in touch. And we're more than happy to get you involved and talk to you on the podcast.
And I suppose one of the things that a lot of my colleagues have been talking to me about, and a general worry, I suppose, is about having difficult conversations. I think obviously part and parcel of us being doctors, being junior doctors, trainees, is that we've had to break bad news at some point in our training till now. And maybe the volume of it has massively varied depending on what sort of job you're in and what specialty you're at and which stage of training you're at, I guess. But with this, there has become a big onus about having conversations, especially in hospital jobs, but also importantly in primary care, about ceilings of care, advanced care planning. And I think that has brought a lot of anxiety for people I know, rightly so, I think, about how we're having these conversations. Are we doing them at the right times with the right support in place? But also a lot of fear from relatives and patients as well, as to, are we only having these conversations because of a COVID-19 outbreak? And I think, I guess, after all this is said and done, whenever that may be, we may just all have to have a huge rethink about how we have these conversations with people because of what we've all been through together.
Oh, definitely. And our practice, I think, is going to change as a whole based on the things that are happening throughout this outbreak. So that's going to be interesting to discuss as in future episodes, is how are things going to change once this all settles down, and how are we going to all practice very differently in maybe 3 or 4 months' time, or a year's time. That's going to be probably a really interesting topic that hopefully we can get a hold of in the future.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be a good way of documenting a lot of what happens over the coming weeks and months, and a chance for all of us to share our worries and concerns, and hopefully some stories of people getting together and supporting one another as well.
Yeah.
In terms of kind of the experience so far, so has your working shift changed at all? You said you were doing clinic and now you're on the wards. Is that something that's happened to lots of trainees in the hospital?
Yeah, so as far as I'm aware from other trainees in the hospital, HEE has put out a statement today, I believe, talking about where trainees should be and whether they stay in those posts or not, but where there is room for movement, that people can be redeployed, and sort of to be expected that that may be the case. I certainly know that there are some trainees in specific specialties that have been asked to move into sort of more front-facing work. But similarly, I know, and I guess this is something we should touch upon at some point, about, you know, staff members who have underlying health conditions, about the type of support they need to try and get via their supervisors or occupational health to make sure that they're placed in appropriate areas of work, or isolating if they need to be doing so, and getting the support for that.
Yeah. Locally, the thing that we've seen is it's all sort of juniors that are on surgical jobs having moved to other areas such as medicine and ITU. Of course, there's the national changes, which is anyone that was due to move to a new job from April will now not be moving, or will be staying where they are, or will be moving to a job based on local circumstances. So it's a time for massive change, which will affect some GP trainees, won't affect other GP trainees, but will also affect trainees as a whole in other specialties. So, I mean, the quicker we realise the impact this is having on all of our colleagues, the easier we'll be able to support each other through this.
Yeah, and even you, Ant, right? You were supposed to be sitting a specific exam in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, that's right. So, I was meant to be sitting my CSA, but obviously now exams have been cancelled. So both the AKT and the CSA have been cancelled for the foreseeable future. So there won't be another CSA or an AKT exam until at least the autumn. And obviously that could change depending on what the situation is in a few months' time. And I know that lots of trainees who were preparing for both those exams might feel a bit disappointed that they'd either paid for courses or, spent a lot of time trying to revise for those exams. But equally, from the people that I've spoken to so far, everyone understands why the exams were cancelled and appreciates that it was inevitable and not something that the college could continue with. Now, the question on everyone's mind is, what next? So if I can't sit my CSA in a few weeks' time, what happens when I come to my CCT day in the autumn, and can I get my CCT without the exams? Is there anything else that I would need to do instead of that? And those are questions which are still open at the minute. There's a lot of conversations and meetings going on between the college, between Health Education England and the GMC about what we're going to do with this cohort of trainees who need to CCT in the autumn, but at the minute won't be able to sit an exam, which is a part of that. And from the numbers that I've seen, there's around 2,000 GP trainees that need to sit either their CSA or their AKT in order to get their CCT. So there's a huge number of trainees which need to obviously pass their exams, but also need to CCT. And part of the CCTing is also not just about making sure that they're safe, good GPs, but also we have to think about the next cohort of GP trainees who are going to enter in August as well as ST1s. And we need there to be the number of trainers, the number of posts for them to actually enter into the training workforce. And if we don't allow people to CCT, then that could delay some people being able to enter training. So it's a really difficult, challenging situation. But I've been reassured that all of the right people, all of the senior people in all of these organisations are prioritising this, and hopefully we should have some more answers within the next few weeks about what's going to happen.
Absolutely, and we would hope that once this information is out there, that you will be able to hear this either being disseminated by your local reps or on the website, but also check this podcast out. We will have latest guidance as we get it. We can't promise that we can always answer the questions straight away, but we will try our best to try and get information for you sort of as soon as it's sort of released.
Yeah, I've been really, really pleased to see that when I've been having conversations with trainees, obviously there are a lot of really important concerns that all of us have, but everybody appreciates that this is an unprecedented situation. Nobody expects everybody to have all the answers already. But I've also been reassured to see that all of the right people in all of these organisations have heard us, know the issues, and are taking them forward. So I do feel happy that within the next few weeks, we're going to continue to get more answers on all of this.
Thanks, Anne. And we look forward to hearing more. The other area, which is obviously changing rapidly, is the sort of time that we're spending in our educational time versus our clinical time. And that's a balance that obviously we need to get right in this current climate where the clinical impact is quite significant. Our VTS was cancelled last week and will not go on for future versions. And actually, last week we had a Zoom session, so it was an online VTS for that single week, and that was really an opportunity for us to share our concerns and share our problems. What does this mean for trainees that are in general practice in terms of their time and what they should be doing throughout their week?
Yeah, so again, I think this is something that's still quite an open area, and we're waiting for further guidance. So basically every few months there's something called a Specialty Advisory Committee, which is a meeting between senior educators at the RCGP and also many people from Health Education England. And there's a committee of postgraduate educational directors, which includes lots of these senior educationalists who join. And it's a chance for the college and these educators to hold each other to account. There's also representation there from the trainee committee. So I go to those meetings as well as the BMA as well. And obviously the last meeting was last week, and all of the agenda shifted to talk about the response to COVID-19 and definitely education versus training time. Education versus like clinical time came up as a key point of discussion. Everybody in that meeting was of the opinion that we should not be asking trainees to work the equivalent of 10 clinical sessions a week, and that we do need to think about how trainees can continue to work sustainably, even under the mounting pressures that we're going to be seeing over the coming months. From speaking to trainees, I know that everybody wants to do their bit, wants to be on the front line, working clinically as much as possible. But realistically, we also have to think about the well-being of trainees, and working flat out all the hours of the week is not something which is sustainable. And so I'm hoping in the next few days, we're going to have more guidance that trainees in general practice will be having some protected time for self-directed learning, which they could use to get together with their colleagues. I think that some VTS groups, half-day releases, it's probably not feasible to think that all of them can continue to function, although we have seen lots of good examples of people doing that virtually. but I think the priority is just making sure that trainees' safety, supervision and well-being remains a priority, even under mounting pressures.
Yeah, and I think another thing, just so that everybody is aware, is that if you are a less than full-time trainee, that should be protected. And unless you are willing or wanting to increase the hours that you're doing, you should be able to still work at that less than full-time training capacity and speak to your supervisors if you are, or TPDs, if you're being asked to work over that. And I think another thing that is on a lot of people's minds is that there will be lots of associates in training who are parents out there who have children and childcare responsibilities that have now added another sort of level of worry and concern to that remit as well. And I think it's just, you will not be alone in this. There are lots of people out there who are concerned. Possibly their childcare options are no longer a factor anymore if they're elderly parents or other people who are now in a self-isolating phase. It's important to know that looking out for information there and doing what's right for yourself and for your family, whilst keeping people in the know, like your training program directors or your educational supervisors.
Yeah,
Mira, you're absolutely correct. And the other thing that's of course come out from Health Education England is everyone should be having the adequate supervision and support, and that should not change despite the pressures that we're under. If you're in general practice, you should be making sure that you have your debriefs after all your sessions with your supervisor. And if you're in clinical work, you should always be supervised appropriately at all times. And if you are moving jobs and moving to a new area or asked to be redeployed, induction is absolutely necessary and you'd have the relevant induction for that job. So these things should not pass.
And if you are doing duties in your job that you've not done before, so I know a lot of my friends who are in general practice, and I'm sure you'll be doing this, are doing so much more telephone triage than previously, and you may not have had much experience in this, your supervisors should absolutely be there despite this stretch time, despite mounting pressures, to support you with that and help you in terms of managing telephone triage, or, you know, when you're seeing patients in the hospital with COVID-19 and you're worried maybe for your own health or someone at home, is to let people know so you can be appropriately supported.
Yeah. And I guess just on that point about additional sources of support, so definitely for all trainees, your trainer and your practice should still continue to provide adequate support and supervision. But as Mira says, in general practice, we are changing the ways that we work quite a lot. So in my practice and most practices now, we're doing telephone triage first and seeing very few patients face to face. For many of us, that will be a new skill. Also, for lots of practices now, they've started using video consultations, another new skill. And your trainer and your practice should be able to help provide some support around this. But also, the RCGP is doing a lot of work to provide resources to help people upskill themselves in this area. Because for a lot of GPs, not just trainees, things like video consultations are still very new. And so the college recognises that actually everybody needs to be provided with adequate support to help develop these skills. So last week, the college launched a COVID-19 CPD hub, which will have new resources being posted onto it every couple of days. And a lot of the content which is already on there is around how to do effective telephone triaging, how to have a video consultation, and also up-to-date guidance on COVID-19, how to assess people who might need admission, those kind of topics. And yeah, that will continue as well. So the college will also be thinking not just about clinical topics, but also about well-being. So we're trying to get together a series of events which can be delivered digitally to help people connect. Some of those will be big scale events which anybody could attend. Some will be more locally focused to allow people that chance to connect, which they won't be getting face to face with their colleagues while this is all going on. But I think there's a priority that colleges recognise that we need to provide people with both clinical skills, but also the chance to support one another as well. So we're going to be launching all of that over the coming weeks. And the other exciting thing is that the college will be launching a membership forum where people can discuss issues around COVID-19 as they come up over the coming weeks and months as well.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, I was just looking through emails just to make sure I'm not giving out the wrong information, but talking about supporting each other, especially with potential stress and anxiety that may already be there in the workplace, but added on with the current crisis, is that looking after each other and looking after people around you, not from just a clinical point of view, but from sort of an emotional and mental health being perspective as well. So the RCGP wellbeing team are trying to coordinate something for the website shortly with a few resources that people may find useful. But I do know different VTS groups as well, so those are vocational training scheme groups, I have sort of WhatsApp threads with helpful resources in them as well. So make sure you're, if you are struggling, that you are telling someone about it, and there are resources out there that will hopefully help.
I'm really seeing this as an opportunity to learn. There's so many new resources online, and also learning through clinical experience as well. The e-learning for healthcare released a module on COVID-19. There's a future learn module on COVID-19. This is an opportunity to really gain new skills and hopefully help our population and society as a whole. So I think let's look on the bright side of things.
Yeah. Absolutely. And also, if you are someone who is self-isolating for whatever reason at all, I think the key messages out there is there is a sense of feeling of guilt for doctors that aren't able to come back to work because they feel like they're feeling relatively well and they're at home. The guidance is out there for a reason. We'd much rather people were able to take their annual leave where possible, self-isolate as they do need, so that when they are ready to come back, they are in a much better place to help the rest of their colleagues out, and perhaps pick up a hobby in your self-isolation. I know a friend who's been cooking a new recipe every day, which has been quite interesting to follow on her Instagram.
We just bought a PS4, so that's another way to go about it. Yeah, so I think also something that I wanted to say was just that this is not something which is obviously just affecting GP trainees. This is affecting all doctors, all healthcare professionals across the whole system. And I just saw a message which was shared on one of the very many WhatsApp groups that I'm part of at the minute, which was from an ophthalmology doctor who works at the Royal Free. And they had just written quite a nice statement about their experience so far. So just the Royal Free has changed their rotor. So they've created this mega rotor where most specialties in the hospital, most medical specialties will be joining one unified rotor. And this also then includes ophthalmologists, some radiologists as well, to now deliver like clinical care on the wards, which is something which is a new experience for all of them. And I just was going to read very quickly this guy's statement, because I thought it was quite a nice reflection on some of the challenges, but also some of the positives that are going to be coming over the next few months. So this is the statement. So my name is Aaron. I'm the ST1 ophthalmology trainee at the Royal Free. I finished my foundation training 8 months ago. I know this may not sound long at all, especially compared to many of you who've been out of general medical training for much, much longer. But for me, it feels like a lifetime ago. So when I found out that I would be joining the medical rotor with the rest of my ophthalmology team, words cannot describe the sense of foreboding anxiety we felt. I didn't know where my stethoscope was. I didn't know how to order a chest x-ray, how to request bloods, where to find scrubs. I felt so de-skilled and utterly unequipped for the task ahead, as my day job hadn't included any of this. Here are my thoughts on suddenly entering the world of general medical wards after thinking I would never leave a slit lamp or operating microscope for the wards ever again. I received an email at 5 p.m. on Thursday the 19th of March with over 150 doctors allocated to teams and varying shift patterns. We were informed that this would stretch at least over the next 24 days, but most likely for the foreseeable future. We were expected, as per the rota, to start at 9 a.m. on Friday the 20th of March. Yes, we were all shocked at the exponential pace of the changes and escalation. The rota follows a shift pattern, which is the same for everybody. Every day will be a 12-hour shift, either 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. or 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. And they'll do 3 days on, 3 days off, another 3 days on, another 3 days off, and then the same pattern for 3 days on of nights, 3 days off, 3 days on, 3 days off. He turned up at 8 p.m. to the medical handover, and there are over 30 juniors there for the night team, 5 consultants, which put into perspective where there are normally just 5 to 6 night medical doctors in total. The hospital are taking this very seriously and trying to act early. The entire rota was explained. We were divided into individual teams that we would stay with for the foreseeable future, which consisted of 2 SPRs, 2 SHOs, and 2 F1s. ST1 and 2 ophthalmologists were classified as SHOs and ST3s as associate specialists, everybody else as F1s. Everyone is kind, everyone understands we're all scared, and I felt fully welcomed into the team. There were lots of doctors away because of childcare, anxiety, sickness, self-isolation, but the main thing I have to say is that the medical team behind these changes all understand we have lives, we have families, and everyone is worried. They are happy to do everything to support us. A few things I heard mentioned were free parking, accommodation for doctors, food and drink provided, which also helped support us when we were starting out. With regard to the job on the wards, the medics aren't expecting anything from the ophthalmologists right now. In fact, they're expecting us to be negative in terms of our contribution to the team, having to teach us everything about the IT system, how to escalate, everything that you can think of. They have deliberately acted early to get us on the wards a few days or weeks before the main tsunami hits, so that we feel slightly more comfortable with the basics. Lots of doctors were even sent home early into the last night shift, including myself, because they understand this is a marathon and the goalposts are moving every hour. I was so nervous starting this shift, but I'm so glad for yesterday's experience. This is coming for all of us, the ST1s up to ST7s, the fellows, and very soon, I'm sure, the ophthalmology consultant. The sooner you're involved, the better for you, because you'll get your induction, your training, your questions answered, and some of your doubts resolved before it gets too crazy. We are not expected to do anything out of our comfort zone. The medics want us to become comfortable so that we can be more helpful later down the line. It goes on a bit talking about PPE, but I think mainly it's just the reflection says that our medical colleagues are no less frightened than we are. No specialty is prepared for this pandemic. We will get through this, and we will be back in the safe haven of our clinic rooms and operating theatres before we know it. But for now, we have to stand united with all of our NHS colleagues and stay positive.
Yeah, that's really nice. I think, you know, the lesson you have to take from that is the next time you see you're on a ward round or maybe an ED Hatim and you see a slightly nervous looking orthopaedic surgeon, it's just to help them out, I guess.
That's put a smile on my face, and that's a trust that's obviously moving fast, getting things right and taking the important things into consideration. So it's great to hear.
Yeah, and so moving forward, we want to hear stories from you. Where have you been redeployed to? How has the situation been? We are here to try and help with questions and talk about the current climate, as we have mentioned already, but also to share stories where things may be seeming so bleak right now, but there is that light that we can see at the end of the tunnel.
Exactly. And I think for the next episode of this podcast, it might be helpful to do a bit more of an in-depth Q&A. So there's lots of questions that have come to all of us as reps from trainees around the country, asking specifics about exams, about workplace-based assessments, about leave, those kind of things. So hopefully we can answer some of those. And also in the next few days, the college will be launching a series of FAQs, which also go some way to answer those. So perhaps that might be a nice next step for all of us to do in the following episode.
Exactly. Sorry,
Amira, go for it.
I was just going to say, so if you do have questions, just to remind everyone, we are on Twitter. So I'm at Dr. Mira Kumar.
I'm Dr. underscore Hats.
It's a lot easier to talk over one another when we're not in the same room. I'm Dr. Anthony James.
And we have an email address.
Which is ait.chair@rcgp.org.uk.
I promise we'll learn it for the next time.
thank you for listening. And just want to quickly say, I want to say thank you to all our colleagues in the system, all across the board. So that's everyone working in the hospital, not just the clinical staff, but also the non-clinical staff. Also all the other key workers that are still going out to work across the UK to keep the country running during this difficult period. And I just want to say a massive thank you to the public. It's been lovely to sort of meet patients, and everyone's been really, really kind so far and actually really appreciative for the work that we do. We've had some amazing stuff from companies like Nando's and Marks and Spencer and Kate Box. I'd be sending all sorts of things through to the hospital for staff.
Not locally. By the way.
So, you know, it's just nice to see that across the system we're being appreciated. There's been loads of sort of discounts and offers that have been out there for NHS staff, so keep an eye out for that. And just to keep things positive while we work through this difficult crisis. And the main thing for the public is to just stay at home while we fight this virus on a clinical grounds.
Yeah, I think that's a great end to the first episode. So thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back very soon with the next episode of Somewhere in Between.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Somewhere in Between, the AIT podcast made by... Oh, no. You've been listening...
That's the one that's going to make the podcast.